So, I am Dr. Tanisha Pinckney. I prefer Dr. Tony. Why, I don't know. It just happens that way. I have a PhD in criminal justice and criminology. I basically am somebody who does a lot of things. I suffer with or deal with or live through major depressive disorder and also anxiety and PTSD. So school kind of became part of my treatment plan as I went through life. So I went to school for a lot of different things, including, you know, I'm from New Jersey, and this is the first time anybody told me I wasn't loud enough. How is that? Can everyone hear me? Okay. So I do a lot, like I said, criminal justice. I am on the board of directors of NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness for Massachusetts. And one of the things that I do is train police officers in dealing with suspects or coming to calls, dealing with those that might have mental illness or mental health concern or substance abuse. I also work with victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. I am a survivor myself of both of those. And I also deal with forensic accounting and fraud, which has nothing to do with the other stuff that I just named. But I went to school for it and I like it. And so I've been doing that for about 16 years. My journey into dealing with mental health, I should say that it was my own journey, but it wasn't. It was my son. He, at 7 years old, was diagnosed with schizophrenia. At seven. And I didn't believe the doctor. And the doctor didn't believe himself. So we had to figure that out. And by the time he turned nine and had been through a study or two, it was solidified as his diagnosis. And he's the one who said, "Mom, you speak about everything else. Why don't you speak about this too?" And I learned so many things in dealing with his situation that it became part of my advocacy and my purpose plan for my life. And now I can't imagine doing anything else. So now that I've bored you a little bit talking about me, the reason why I'm here today is to talk to you about something that's really from my life and my own experiences, and hopefully you'll be able to use some of these things for your lives. Now, I do mentor and I coach and I deal with, like I said, a lot of people who deal with mental illnesses and domestic violence and sexual assault. So some of this comes from that. And one of the things is I said to myself one day, I don't know how I can survive everything that I've been through. How do I survive everything that I've been through? And I came to the realization that I already had. The moment that you go through it, you survived it. So if somebody stole your purse and that was the worst thing you ever went through, or your wallet, that actual act of stealing that item might have taken 30 seconds. You survived it. Any emotions after that are not you trying to survive what you went through, it's you trying to survive dealing with what you went through. So at that point I said, okay, I need to figure out what I'm trying to survive then. If I've already survived 8 years of domestic violence during the marriage, not including before the marriage when I was too not smart to not get married, I met him on a bus. So I should have did that whole don't talk to strangers thing, Frank, that my mom told me about. But I talked to a stranger, married the stranger, and now he's a stranger again, and I'm really happy about that. So went through 8 years of domestic violence. I've been sexually assaulted three times. I've dealt with so many issues that I think I broke my therapist again. This is my third therapist, and she cried in our last session. Literally, I had to hand my therapist tissue. And I was like, I didn't even get to my teen years yet. And so I've been through a lot, and it was, how do I deal with it? How do I tell other people to deal with it? Because then it was a thing and said, I'm speaking to all of these people. I've been speaking for years. I speak to all these people, and I'm still struggling myself with depression. Am I a hypocrite because I'm struggling with depression and I'm trying to help other people get through depression? How am I going to survive depression? Well, you survived it yesterday. You survived it 5 minutes ago. You survived it 30 seconds ago. And people would give me advice, you need to get through it. You need to get over it. You know, that whatever happened to you a long time ago. You know, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. It was so long ago. Why am I still having dreams? Or why am I still responding this way? Or why am I still upset? And all of this, and how can I survive all of this? And I did deal with not one, but two suicide attempts that, thank God, I was unsuccessful. So then it became, how do I survive that? The guilt of that, the shame of that. I have two small kids at the time. And how do I look at them? So what I'm going to start with right now is, I'm sorry, my computer needs to see my face in order to work. It says it's making sure that it's me. I guess it agrees that it's me. So I'm going to read you the first page of the introduction of this book. This is one of the four books that I've written. And this is I Am More Surviving Survival, hence what we're talking about today. And this will give you a little bit of a thought as to where we're going today. There was a time in my life that I felt I could not survive all that I had gone through. I felt like life itself forsook me. To take it a step further, I thought the singular purpose for my life was suffering. Of course, now I know none of this was true. My journey past that roadblock of despair was a difficult one. Thankfully, I found myself on the other side in a particularly good place. One day when trying to decide how to navigate what I felt was the worst life could ever offer, I came to an abrupt realization. What I needed to survive was not what I thought I had to survive. I had already survived rape, abuse, domestic violence, failure, misjudgments of others, oppression, financial distress, homelessness, and various other circumstances and people. I had already lived through it. Why then was I trying to survive? What did I think I needed to survive? What did I think I had to survive? Me. I had become my own enemy. I was internally abusing myself. How was I to survive an emotional attack? How was I to protect myself from an unseen enemy? I had to look at it like any other war. I had to look at myself as any other enemy. How do you win usually? You get to know your enemy. You have to know the strengths and weaknesses of your enemy. You get to know that the enemy is what the enemy is thinking and feeling. For this war to end with survival, I had to befriend the enemy. I had to get to know me. I had to learn to love me. That was the key to surviving me. That was the key to my release from sorrow and pain. I became my own best friend rather than worst enemy. So that was the first three paragraphs of my book. And that was a struggle. It took me about 6 or 7 years to learn what you just heard in those three paragraphs. That it wasn't the abuse, because each incident of domestic violence would last 20 minutes. So once I survived that 20 minutes, what was I dealing with? It wasn't the sexual assault, because each one of those, 20 minutes. So what was I dealing with? Then I had to think, well, the people that did all of these things to me, they're going on with their lives. So what am I actually trying to survive? And that's when I had realized that the me I was trying to survive was intrusive, unhealthy thoughts. That it wasn't the reality, it was my perception of what was going on in my life. It was the perception that everything was linked into one thing. So it was that my life was bad. But if you think about it, you wake up in the morning, typical day. You wake up in the morning, you get dressed, you go through your day, you maybe travel, or you go to group, or whatever you do during the course of your day. And then right smack in the middle of your day, you stub your toe on the stairs, or somebody bumps into you and spills coffee on you. And then you're like, oh, I had such a bad day. This happened. And then you go and you say, okay, I can get over it. My day wasn't that bad. Then somebody cuts you off in traffic, or somebody yells at you for something you didn't do, and it's, how did I end up in this? And why am I going through this? I had a bad day. When in actuality, you had a group of two or three bad minutes. The day is 24 hours. 24 whole hours. So even if the worst thing happens to you, happens to me on a particular day, it didn't happen over 24 hours. So there is still some good left to that day. Not only that, there are 7 days in a week. So even if you have a bad day, a day that you can deem as bad, and wait, my week isn't ruined just because it happened on a Wednesday or a Friday or a Monday, doesn't mean everything is ruined and this was the worst week or the worst month or the worst year. So I had to learn to stop stringing everything that happened in together, because what began happening was every time somebody cut me off in traffic, they were basically the same person that abused me. Every time somebody rushed in front of me, you can tell I have this thing with people getting in front of me, at the supermarket, it was, oh, you're just like everybody else. Every time my kid cried because I wasn't moving fast enough to get them something, you're just like everyone else. But no, I had to stop and say, these are all individual incidents. And once I got to that point, it takes you a while to get to that point sometimes, unless some of you might be a little bit better with dealing with stuff than I am, but it takes me some time to move on sometimes. And then I realized, wait, you know, I'm thinking I'm doing good, and I figured this whole life thing out. And then somebody says, you didn't get over that yet? What do you mean I didn't get over it yet? Well, you didn't, you know, that death that happened, that was 3 years ago or 15 years ago. That assault, that abuse, that lie, that person that cheated you, why aren't you over it yet? And then I kind of had a vision in my head of a mountain. Anybody know the three ways you can get on the other side of a mountain? What's one way? You can get over it. What's another way?
Around it.
You can go around it. You can go through it. So there's four. There's one more. Yes.
Forgive.
You can forgive. Well, you can't. That's a good one when it comes to life. But for an actual mountain, you can forgive Mount Everest, but it's not going to do anything. So what else can we do for actual mountain? You can. Right, or you can dig under it, right? You can dig under it And you can bury yourself and feel the weight of the mountain on you. So in my life, I had to figure out, am I going over it? Am I going around it? Am I going through it? Am I going under it? Because people want me to climb this steep mountain called life, get all the way to the top where I'm the best I can be, and then what? Go down? That doesn't make sense. You want me to climb it, go up, and then go down and end up on the same level I began on. And that's when it came to me, I'm not trying to get over it, I'm trying to get through it. Because it's okay to feel. I don't want to focus so much on, I need to get over the mountain, because then it becomes all about the mountain and not about progress. It becomes, I'm trying to get over it. Oh, I slipped a little bit. I'm trying to climb. I don't have the right tools. I don't have this. I don't have that. I can't even rest. Excuse me. While I'm climbing this mountain, because if I stop to rest, I might fall. So I have to constantly stay alert. Even if I just decide to chill on the side of the mountain for a second, I have to always be intense and alert, so I can never totally relax. But if I'm going through the mountain, yeah, it's hard because you're digging, and you might not always see how far you have ahead of you, but you know that every little thing you do is progress. Every time you try to move even the smallest pebble, it's progress. And there's something about you rewarding yourself. You don't have to take the largest steps. Think about a baby. When that baby takes that first step and everybody claps and applauds and, oh, this is so great. He took his first step. My kid is brilliant. No. Maybe your kid is brilliant. I don't know. But it's, that kid wobbled, probably fell. Sometimes I've seen, like if you go on YouTube, you can see all the kids fall on their face, and then you feel really bad for watching it, but it is funny. So you see the kid, and it's like, you don't worry about that their legs weren't strong enough, or their legs weren't shaped right, or they weren't prepared, or they hadn't tried this on their own before they got out in front of people. What are you excited about? You're excited about progress, about growth. And then you say, one step at a time. But when it comes to your own life, we expect ourselves to sprint. We don't give ourselves permission to say, even though I started taking a few steps, I'm not ready yet. I think I'm going to get back on the floor and crawl so that I can have progress. But we see once we get back on the floor to crawl, I'm going backwards, so I'm just going to stay here because this is not good. I don't know how I'm going to survive this. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. For me, it was about permission. Giving myself permission to not be perfect. Giving myself permission to not care who thought I wasn't perfect. I'm a preacher's kid. And anybody who knows preacher's kids, it's a lot of pressure sometimes. Because if you have to deal with and people look at you and they figure because you are the pastor's kid, you're supposed to have it all figured out. You're supposed to know the Bible from front to back, and you're supposed to live this perfect life, and I was not that person. My parents raised me to be independent and thinking and find my way on my own, and if I wanted to deal with the church and go to church, that was my decision, how I wanted to put the energy into it. And I ended up doing it, but the point was, well, everybody else can't know. So I began to go through things, hiding the fact that I was going through them, and then getting upset with people who didn't know, And then when they found out, getting upset with them because they wanted me to get over it. And I'm like, look, I'm still going through it, and I'm going through it really slow because I didn't tell anybody about it, and I didn't go to get help, and I didn't deal with it, and it's there. And I'm trying to survive the process. And then I said, wait a minute. Again, I already survived. Like I said, one of the things that I do is forensic accounting, and I'm from New Jersey. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, and in and around Newark, New Jersey. And I ended up with an accounting firm that all of the clients were very high income, like ridiculously high income. Like they, you know, millions of dollars worth of horses and this, that, and the other, and their toys are probably worth more than what a valuator would say my whole life is worth at this point. But I went in and I put on my best suit, and I had on, I'm already tall, I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I had on 5-inch heels. And I walked into a Starbucks, and this is, of course, in New Jersey, where we don't have as many Dunkin' Donuts as you do. We have the real coffee called Starbucks. I walked in, and everybody turned around and looked at me. And in my head, I didn't see myself as being 6 feet tall with 5-inch heels on, and I was about 50 pounds thinner than. And I had a suit on, and I tend to like to throw my clients off by wearing a pantsuit with a regular men's tie, because being a woman in the type of accounting I do, you very seldom see a woman, so I completely would do that to throw them off. And everybody's looking at me and turn their head, and I'm like, why are they looking at me? But what I saw was, they're looking at my hurt. They're looking at my pain. Then I said, no, maybe they're looking at I'm all put together. And whatever, in that moment, the thought came to me, I am more. Whatever you think about me, I am more. And that became a mantra for my life. And it became a mantra that I told other people to use. Not I am more than, because then you're limiting yourself. I am more than this, and I'm more. Because what if you forget to list something? Then you're not more than that too? So it was, I am more. And it was such a freeing moment. That was my moment of saying, I finally went from basically I am nothing to I am me. Because I begin to literally, and I'm not saying this to be conceited or self-centered or whatever, but I had to become my own best friend. I had to get to know myself. I didn't even know what kind of movies I liked. I didn't know. It was like a whole new person. I would try new things. Do I even like this juice? Do I like this food? I had totally forgotten who I was. So it was, I am me. All right. Now, what am I supposed to do with that? And then in that moment, standing at that Starbucks, I realized that no matter what I had gone through, I am more. No matter what was ever going to happen to me, how well I was going to do in life, how many degrees I got, who my clients were or not, what my kids did or did not do, I am more. There was always opportunity that as long as I kept going through, there will always be progress. And there was always more to me. And it left me open to also feeling like no one can take my power away because my power is in my more. Because more is almost infinite. And I'm not saying that. I know I'm not. I don't have superpowers. My kids think I do. I let them think that. And that's okay. They're 18 and 19. I need them to think I have superpowers right now. But it wasn't about, and I'm not talking about necessarily a spiritual power or a universal power. I'm talking about the empowerment that's within who you are. To say, I cannot, no, my power cannot be taken away from me because I always have more. That the things that are meant to weaken me really do make me stronger. That I can learn from everything that has happened to me or that I did. Because I also had to come to the realization that, you know what, while I'm not a an offender and I am a victim, I'm not always a nice person. I need to deal with that because I am more, and I need to deal with the fact that in order to totally get through this mountain that had built up on top of me of all of life's things, that to really come into my own strength, I had to deal with my own weaknesses. So I had to acknowledge my weaknesses. Because I don't know who here might have dealt with, you're walking through an airport or you're walking through a store, and when you first have your bags, you feel like you can run with them almost. But then after you take a few steps and then a few more steps, it gets heavier and heavier, but really none of the weight in the bag has changed. What that weight is revealing is your weaknesses. So what do? You problem solve. Maybe you switch the bags and change the weight so that one arm will have more weight than the other. Or you'll say, okay, I'll give one arm a break, and you switch up and you change. That's because you've gotten to know yourself well enough that you can identify where the weakness is. And you're saying, I'm okay with that. I can still get to my destination. I can still carry all this baggage that I have. And I can get through it and I can survive it, because when I get to the other side, I can put this crap down and I can rest. That's what life is, isn't it? Getting there so that when you get through to a different point, you realize that some of the weights begin to fall off, or you can put some of the things down. And someone in the back mentioned forgiveness. And I'm glad she did that, because forgiveness is one of the most powerful tools of getting through that mountain. Forgiving yourself, forgiving those around you, whether or not they ask for it, forgiving your God or higher power or the universe or whomever you choose to or not to worship, forgiving your family, forgiving the people who did not know you were going through something because you didn't tell them, which was really hard for me. I was mad at the world, and the world didn't even know. They didn't know I went through anything. So forgiveness was one of the most powerful tools. Another tool, which is in, I love this computer, I really do. It's making sure it's me again. It says it can't recognize me. So maybe I don't recognize it.
Microphone.
All right. Yeah, that's probably it, the microphone. So I want to give you a few of the tools, because we're going to wrap up very shortly so that we can open up for any questions. And some of these tools are from my book, Get Over It, I'm still getting through it. Very specific. 15 tools to help you succeed at a new normal. And once I looked at forgiveness, that's when I realized that I had entered a new normal. And then I said, what is normal? Normal is very similar to success. My success doesn't look like Frank's success or Jennifer's success, or I can't read past there because I need new contacts, or Barry's success. We each have our own definition and our own benchmarks for success. The same is true for normal. We say typical and atypical. It used to be normal and abnormal. But you get to define what's normal for you and what's acceptable for you. And then you get to say, you know what? This is okay for me. It doesn't have to be okay for everyone else, but it has to be okay for me. And if you're making a rational decision about what's okay for you, you're still going to care about how what's okay for you affects other people. So here are some of the tools. I already said one, acknowledge that you were never powerless. Your power, you ever on your phone or a computer, you're down to like 1%, and it's like, I can't do that. It's like, well, you have 1%, I want to take a picture. No, you can't, there's not enough power. But there's still power in the phone, and even if that phone gets to zero, what do? You plug it in to get more power. So resting, self-care, all of those things are replenishing power because your battery is not ever truly dead. It has enough energy in it. It just needs to be excited. It just needs a little boost to be able to do more. Have no shame. What you went through, what you're thinking, what you're going through, shame is counterproductive. Take time to heal. First, you have to take time to hurt. A lot of times we skip over that part and we get right to, I want to heal. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to feel. And then you take time to heal. And you get to dictate how much time that takes. Define your normal. Educate your support team. Let them know what you need and what you feel about what they're giving you. Communicate, because they are one of your tools. And if you don't use that tool, your power is going to drain quicker as you try to go through it, because you don't have anybody helping you carry the load, or you don't have anybody to replenish you. Don't be a slave to fashion or fads or anything that make you feel like I have to do this to be like other people. Be yourself. I already said success is relative. I talked about baby steps, bite-sized wins. You don't have to live, take one day at a time. If you have to take 1 second at a time, celebrate every second. That is okay. Because sometimes, if you've ever been where I've been, a day is a long time to say, I need to make it through this day. I need to make it through this hour. So if it has to be a second, if it has to be 5 minutes, whatever it is, that is your measurement for your win. Identify what you're passionate about and live that passion. Because that's another thing that's going to keep you energized so that you can tunnel through that mountain. Exhibit confidence without a mask. That means confidence in whatever you are feeling. Even if you're feeling sad, be confident that the face you have when you're sad is your face, and you're happy with it, and this is what you're dealing with today. It doesn't matter what other people feel. Be confident in your feelings. If you're happy and you're smiling and people think, it's not appropriate to smile right now, that's something you can work on later. But as for this moment, be confident. Then declare, I am more. That's in every one of my books. Fit it in there, either in a title or something else. Declare that you are more. And no one can ever take it away from you, because you are the one that declared it. It's not something somebody told you. It's not something that somebody gave you permission or that you have to take a class on. You get to create every aspect of your more. And let me tell you, that's really fun. But it's also a lot of responsibility, because we know that in going through that mountain, responsibility is very important, because you're going to feel alone sometimes. You're going to feel tired. You're going to feel like you want to give up. You're going to hear the voices outside the mountain telling you, you need to get over it, come out, just go over it and deal with it, because we're tired of you going through this. And you're saying, no, I'm trying to push ahead. So you get to define your progress and your more. So I can say more, but anybody have any questions for me? Excuse me.